David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to The Advisor. My name is Lisa Urbanski. I co-host the show, joined by Dr. Susan Landers today. And this is like a really big deal on many fronts. So one, Susan is just amazing. She's a baby doctor. I like to say baby doctor with decades of experience caring for the tiniest and most vulnerable little patients. She is not only a leader in neonatal medicine, but is also an author, sharing her journey of balancing a high-stakes medical career with motherhood in her new book called So Many Babies. So this is also, I'm super excited and probably the most excited. Her podcast, Moms Matter, has soared to the top 2 percentile in the parenting section on Spreaker. And her podcast is now featured on their homepage. Talk about killing it in this world. This is so amazing. And you know, before I introduce her, I just want to thank Spreaker and iHeartRadio for your sponsorship and support, and for helping, you know, Susan soar to the top 2 percentile. So amazing. Today, we're going to jump into babies. Everything about babies. Babies explained. So if you know anyone who is having a baby or who has just had a baby, please for this episode to them. It can be a game changer. And if you have not yet liked or subscribed, please do so as well right now. We'll wait for you because we also need your support to grow. And we just appreciate you all so much. Susan, welcome back. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Lisa. I am fine. And this is my favorite topic in the whole world since this is what I did for 35 years before I retired. Babies. I love talking, babies. I love talking to new parents. It's always the scariest time in their lives. And it's such a crucial pivot point for so many people, mothers, couples, families, that I just want to share how wonderful that time is. But in America, our culture has sort of put all this weight on moms and having to do things perfectly. And maybe our aunt and our mother-in-law or our mother are not around, and so we might not know what we're doing when we bring home our baby. That's the way I was. So I wanted to explain a little bit about having a newborn. Everybody knows all about getting pregnant, and many, many couples are now dealing with infertility, trying to get pregnant. That's a whole different topic. If you're lucky enough to have an uncomplicated pregnancy, you're most likely to deliver a healthy full-term baby. 95% of pregnancies produce healthy full-term babies. Full-term is 40 weeks. Now, every now and then something goes wrong. 5% of the time, moms will deliver early, prematurely, due to preterm labor, preterm rupture of membranes, high blood pressure, twins. Their due date is more like 37 weeks instead of 40 weeks. And so things do occur, and parents are thrown for a loop during pregnancy because, like, oh my God, what do you mean? We're going to have our baby and it's 34 weeks. There are lots of different sizes and shapes of newborn preterm infants. The little teeny guys, 2 pounds and under, will definitely need long-term NICU care. And their survival rates are better and better every year. Those tiniest babies will survive 40 or 50% of the time. Babies between 3 to 4 pounds will survive 85 or 90% of the time. And of course, full term, larger preemies and full term babies are going to grow up to be perfectly normal children, generally, unless something's gone wrong. There is kind of a movement among moms to want to have their babies a little early. Like you get really big when you're pregnant and you get tired and you can't sleep and you want your obstetrician to deliver you early, either induction or C-section. And we don't have to talk about that today. But a lot of moms want to throw in the towel at 37 or 38 weeks. And sometimes what happens when they get delivered early, 37 or 38 weeks, the baby is actually 35 or 36 weeks gestation and born prematurely. And late preterm infants, bigger preemies, still act like preemie infants. They have breathing pauses. They don't eat correctly. They act like they have an infection. And maybe there was signs of infection in the mom that prompted the early delivery. But they can be hard to feed. And they can also need NICU care, not for months, but maybe days or a week or two. And so I want to caution parents against throwing in the towel early. If you feel like you want to have a baby at 36 or 37 weeks and get it over with, please don't. Wait until you reach 40 weeks. Work with your obstetrician. You're going to see him or her every week. And carry your baby as long as you safely can, because every week makes a huge difference. Most people have their babies in the hospital. What we know about home deliveries, we could spend a whole nother hour on that, is that if you are a low-risk mom, your pregnancy is perfectly normal, and you deliver at home with a midwife, you are most likely to have everything turn out fine. But there is a significant number of babies born at home where something goes wrong, the baby might be stuck, or the baby might get in distress before delivery, and then you're at home and not in a medical institution. And so home births tend to have a higher incidence of seizure disorders and developmental problems because of unexpected stresses at home. If you deliver in a hospital, people are around to jump on whatever the problem is and take care of it, and we don't see those statistics. So here's a little caution against home births. It's really only for moms who are full-term, low-risk, normal pregnancies. It's not for twins and triplets. It's not for a mom with gestational diabetes or high blood pressure. So stay pregnant till 40 weeks. Try to have your baby in a medical facility where there's an obstetrician or a midwife or both. So most babies pop out perfectly normal. And the biggest decision that parents make is breastfeeding or bottle formula feeding. Moms are very savvy these days. They've read all about the benefits of breastfeeding. They know all about the difficulties that they might face. And they also know to expect help in the hospital from a lactation consultant if there are any problems. What I want to say to new moms is that, and I was the same way, breastfeeding is not easy. It is not like rolling off a log. It is a learned behavior. Baby has to learn to latch on properly. Mom has to learn how to position baby. The milk doesn't come in for 2 or 3 days, and mature milk does not come in for 2 or 3 weeks, full complement of milk. And that first 2 or 3 weeks is a huge learning curve for moms who are breastfeeding. And many women have trouble with abnormal breast anatomy or nipples that become injured or sore or bleeding, or infection or engorgement, and they end up pumping and bottle feeding breast milk. Long-term infant outcomes are better for breastfed babies, but they're not bad for formula-fed babies. And all pediatricians want babies to be fed to grow and to thrive. So if you're choosing not to breastfeed, formula feeding is fine as long as you have good pediatric care and normal immunizations. Breastfeeding decreases the risk of otitis media, ear infections in the first year or two, less diarrhea, less infections, bronchiolitis, like RSV infections. So there are some big benefits to breastfeeding. And 80% of mothers in the US start off breastfeeding. Now, because it's difficult and because women work, and because they have to go back to work, only about 40% of moms are still exclusively breastfeeding at 6 months. It's kind of a sad figure, and it tells us that so much happens to.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
In the mother's life, in the baby's life, during those first 3 or 4 months that can interfere with breastfeeding. And the biggest one is mom going back to work. That is the biggest predictor of early cessation of breastfeeding. So moms should not feel guilty regardless of what they choose to feed their baby. As long as their baby's growing and thriving, that's what's important. If your kid is in the NICU, if you have a premature baby that's in the NICU, the nurses will tell you that pumping breast milk is absolutely beneficial and preferable. And that is true. We know that breastfed preterm babies survive more often, have fewer complications, and a better developmental outcome at 2 years. Isn't that amazing? So it's almost like what's in the breast milk is really what they need to develop their little brains. So, if your baby's in the NICU, there will be kind of a push to get you to pump your breast milk for them. For full-term babies, it's not that crucial. And I don't want any mom who decides to formula feed to feel guilty about it, because that's kind of what we went through in the last decade was mommy wars about breastfeeding and formula feeding, and it's not necessary. There's something major that happens when you have a newborn baby, whether it's a preemie or a full term, but let's just talk about full terms, Lisa. The first year, at least, not 1 month, not 3 months, but a whole year, is a period called matrescence. Matrescence is this period where a woman becomes a mother. It's not like rolling off a log either. We don't grow up in a culture where we have watched other women become mothers and held babies and shared nursing babies and done things that our ancestors did. We've grown up in a culture where the moms are, for the most part, alone or with their husband or partner, and they're expected to know how to do everything. And here's this creature, this beautiful baby that depends on you for food and comfort. And matrescence asks you to leave your identity as a working woman or a wife or a person aside and become a mother. And it is different from being just a woman, just a working woman, just a wife, just a person who didn't have a baby. And every mother remembers that experience with their first baby, where they look at their baby and go, oh my God, I don't even know if I know how to take care of this little darling. Not all women are bonded to their babies right away. Some mothers have had a traumatic pregnancy or delivery. Some mothers may have an unanticipated pregnancy and decided to carry it to term and be ambivalent about this whole thing of, do I really want to have children? And so it's not uncommon for women to look at their baby and go, and here's this crying thing that's keeping you up at night, and you're trying to learn to breastfeed and you're trying to take care of it. And you go, I'm not really sure I love this thing right now. I'm not really sure we're connected. And that can be a real rude awakening for lots of moms, lots of new moms. Matrescence is like a major milestone for women. It's as important as menarche, starting your period. It's as important as menopause, where you end your fertility. Matrescence is this finding your identity as a mother and learning how to take care of your baby, whether you're in love with this little darling or not. What if you have a baby that cries 10 hours a day? What if you have a baby that has special needs? And some of the NICU moms have trouble with this because they may take a baby home that needs some tube feeding or nasal cannula for oxygen, things like that. So things happen that make us a little bit more standoffish about our roles as being a mother. It's not uncommon to question yourself. I did it. I was a neonatologist with 6 years experience as a pediatrician. And when I had my first baby, he was born at 36 weeks. So he was kind of a sluggish, sleepy little preemie. Every time he woke up and cried, if I couldn't figure out what was going on, it was like, am I doing this right? What am I missing? What does he need? Am I not being a good mother? I would ask myself those questions. And I want our listeners to know all mothers ask themselves those questions. All mothers question their ability to take care of their baby. Because we've grown up in a culture where we're so much in a silo. We are in a home with a husband or a partner or maybe a single mom, and we are expected to know how to take care of this miniature human being. And if we've read some books and if we've watched some YouTube videos and if we've heard some podcasts, maybe we're educated. But the experience really determines how well this process goes for new moms. Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely amazing. And I love how you normalized the experience of having a baby and not kind of loving it at first, because it's such a change and a difference. And I know a lot of, you know, my friends who have had babies have gone through that, and they feel so guilty about that.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But it's a normal experience. And so many people go through it.
Totally normal. Postpartum depression occurs in 1 out of 8 moms after delivery. That is the most common complication of pregnancy. And so women might be sad, their hormones are raging, they're having trouble with breastfeeding, they don't have a good helper, they're sleep deprived, they're not eating well, they may even not want to take a shower. They may not want to get dressed. They don't want to talk to visitors. Their whole mood just implodes. And I've been there. After my third baby, I had postpartum depression. It was kind of a odd situation with a job and a move and all that. But postpartum depression is really serious. And if you're not sleeping and you're not eating and you don't want to take care of your baby and you're not interested in everyday activities, that is serious when you have a newborn. And what if you have a crier? What if you have a baby that's got a very high-strung temperament and you're having a hard time figuring out what he wants when he cries? That makes a huge difference. And so postpartum depression, I wrote a brand new blog on my website about this because it's so common. Postpartum depression can really interfere with your whole outlook about your baby and about yourself, your ability to be a mom. I want moms to know postpartum depression is treatable. It goes away with talk therapy and with antidepressants. It is totally treatable, totally reversible. It is a problem related to pregnancy. It is not you. You are not a bad mom if you have postpartum depression. So if you know anybody that's going through that, please encourage them to get help. Check out my blog on my website, SusanLandersMD.com. I've got lots of information there about postpartum depression. So matrescence is no easy period in a woman's life. Most of us don't know how to read babies. And what I mean by that is that newborn babies, Lisa, this may surprise you, but newborn babies give us cues.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Isn't that interesting? You think they're just kind of a little blank slate and there's head flops around and they don't do anything, but they know their mother's voice. They know the smell of their mother. They will act like they're hungry long before they cry. They'll suck on their fist or they'll smack their lips or they'll turn their head, bob their head around, kind of, that's called rooting. And when they wake up, they may have these little behaviors and parents don't know what they mean. And they're telling us they're hungry. They want to be fed. If a new mom waits until the baby starts crying, the kid is way harder to settle down and to feed than when they first woke up and gave some hunger cues. So babies give cues. When babies are overstimulated, they will arch their back. They will cry. They will stretch out their arms and legs as if they are resisting. And what they want and the way to calm them down is they want to be flexed, like in the fetal position. They want to be swaddled and held together in the fetal position. They want you to sway your body back and forth and go shushing. And they want you to give them a pacifier or let them suck. That's what calms down babies. Swaying, swaddling, shushing, and sucking. And parents usually go through and do some of those things when they're desperate. But I like to tell people that those things right up front are things that parents can use to calm down a crying baby. I mean, of course, you've changed the diaper, and of course, you know whether or not the baby's hungry and has been fed within the previous 2 hours. But some kids really just need to be confined and held. They love to be held up over your shoulder. And I don't think parents know this. I don't think parents know that babies like to be swaddled tightly, given a pacifier, and over your shoulder while you're swaying, walking around the nursery even. And so I've heard so many new parents tell me, well, we sort of discovered what he liked because we're trying all these different things. So I want parents to know right up front, swaying and shushing and sucking and swaddling are very beneficial to calm down babies who are overdone. What have you heard, Lisa, about questions that new parents might have about how to take care of a baby, how to read their cues?
I think for me, it's more about sleep. I always hear questions about why is it so challenging to put my baby to sleep? Is sleep, what should I do? Should I start sleep training? Should I be picking up my baby when they're crying all like for 3 hours straight, right? Like, I think it's more about sleep and how to handle that.
There you go.
That's a huge,
Sleep.
huge one.
It is. Babies do not sleep through the night until 10 to 12 weeks of age. Sleeping through the night is a brain thing. It's not a nutrition thing. Formula-fed babies do not sleep through the night any sooner than breastfed babies in control studies. And everybody's tired after delivery because this baby is eating every 3 or 4 hours, sometimes every 2 or 3 hours if you're breastfeeding. And so putting a baby down to sleep in the first couple of months just requires that you recognize their signals that they're sleepy. They start yawning. They start disconnecting. They're not looking at you. They're not interacting anymore. They may be crying and will settle with a pacifier or being held and being rocked. So learning what your baby likes to go to sleep is important. Recognizing that babies wake up about every 3 or 4 hours for the first 3 months. That's just the way it is. Their days and nights are all mixed up. They have no diurnal rhythm until they're 3 or 4 months old. So no one recommends sleep training until about 3 or 4 months for that reason. The first 3 months, you're supposed to feed them, interact for 5, 10, 15 minutes, put them down when they're sleepy. And the golden rule is mom sleeps when the baby sleeps. Now, what interferes with that? You might have a kid that's hard to put down. You might have a bunch of visitors. You might have a baby that's overstimulated and doesn't settle easily. You might have a mom that's exhausted or depressed. All of those things affect our ability to get our kids settled so we can catch 2 or 3 hours of sleep. But expecting your little darling to sleep through the night before 10 to 12 weeks is really not rational. It's rarely going to happen. I had a baby sleep through the night at 3 weeks of age, but she was born at 10 and a half pounds. And she acted like she was 1 month old when she was born. She only nursed like five times a day. It was really strange. So, and every baby's different. The thing about sleep in the newborn period is that parents have to figure out what their baby likes to settle them down before sleep. Is it a bath? Is it dim lights? Is it special music? Is it rocking? Is it sucking and rocking? Is it a feeding and let them fall asleep at the breast or the bottle? I confess, I let my children nurse to sleep and rock them. And when I got up to put them in the crib, they would wake up again. So
Oh my.
there's no perfect way to get your baby to go to sleep. And every parent must recognize mothers and fathers that they're going to be sleep deprived during the first few months. Please try to limit your visitors. Please limit your phone calls. Don't go on your phone scrolling and looking at social media, because that just prevents you from taking a nap. And what you really want to do is learn how to read your baby. I can't stress this enough. Newborns give us cues for everything they want, whether they're hungry, whether they're starving, whether they're a little sleepy, whether they're exhausted, whether they're overstimulated, they will let you know. And if you go through your mind, is he hungry? Is he overstimulated? Is she exhausted? Is she sleepy? If you go through all of these things in your mind, you will figure out what your baby's telling you. I guarantee it. And babies are different. I mean, every mom and every baby combination is different. Some of us get lucky with easy babies.
Totally.
Some people have screaming babies. Now, colic doesn't occur until probably 6 weeks, 8 weeks. 6 weeks is a little early. You know, people have heard about colic and they God forbid, they have to deal with a colicky baby. That's really when babies are a little older, a month to 2 months of age. So in the first month, your goal is really learning how to read your baby, getting enough sleep when you can, and feeling good about what you're doing with your baby.
I have a question for you. So what is something about having a baby that most new parents are not prepared for, they don't see coming?
I think they do always see sleep deprivation coming. And I don't think they know how to deal with it. They know they're going to be sleep deprived, but they don't know how to deal with it. And that's why I like to say, limit the visitors, get off your phone, don't scroll social media, take lots of naps, tag team mom and dad. So the other one, the one who's feeding, can get a 4 or 5 hour nap instead of just 2 or 3 hours. Another common thing that parents don't know is that crying is a late sign of hunger. It is really crucial for parents to recognize early, subtle hunger cues. If your baby is screaming and yelling and thrashing around, it's hard to settle them down to put them to the breast or the bottle. And then they swallow air, and then they have a little tummy ache, and then they act like they're just a screaming mess. And so I think waiting for a baby to cry to tell you they're hungry is a myth.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Is wrong.
Okay.
There's one other, it's not exactly a myth, but there is a notion that sleeping with your baby is dangerous.
I've heard that before.
Yeah. Now, if you're on a couch or a recliner or a very soft bed with lots of pillows around you, with toys, stuffed animals, sleeping with your baby in that environment is dangerous. It increases the risk of suffocation, or SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. If you've been drinking alcohol or using other substances and you sleep with your baby, that's dangerous, because you're not going to attend to them. You're not going to see those cues when they give them to you. And you might even roll over on the baby. And those kind of suffocation events, unfortunately, do happen. So the current recommendation is for babies to sleep very close to mom and dad in a co-sleeper or a crib that's very nearby, so you can tell when the baby is waking up and get to them quickly for a feeding, but not to sleep in the bed with you. Some parents do co-sleep and bed share, and as long as it's done in a very safe way, it's not dangerous, and it has been shown to improve breastfeeding.
Oh, wow.
Lisa, I just finished a brand new ebook called Newborn Nurture. It's available on my website, and I've got all this information in there. Baby cues, hunger, crying, sleep, safe sleep, all the recommendations, everything that's current on how to read your baby, how to read your baby's cues, give them comfort, put them down to sleep safely. I don't get into sleep training because that's later. That's 3 or 4 months of age. I'm just talking about the first month or two when you're trying to figure out how to take care of this newborn. So if there are new parents listening, please search for Newborn Nurture on my website. It's an ebook that will answer all of your questions.
Amazing. Do you want to remind us what your website is, Susan?
SusanLandersMD.com. Very simple. And
Amazing.
I've got a blog there for parents. I've got several ebooks. But I'm so excited about the newborn nurture because it's brand new. I get so many questions from new parents about these issues that we've been talking about today. I mean, until you have a baby and go through the first 2 or 3 months, some people are just clueless. I was. I mean, lots of us are. It's just a hard thing to do. We're thinking about going back to work, and we're thinking about how much babies cost and all of the burden of raising a child in
Challenge.
our culture. Yeah, it's such a big challenge. Such
Well,
a big challenge.
I know a lot of people having babies right now. I know that, typically women and couples are waiting a little bit longer these days. So they're having children more like in their late 30s, early 40s. More
Yes.
people are doing that. And I mean,
Yes.
that is a challenge in itself because you're stuck in your ways and your routine, and now you're bringing a child into this world, and the world is a lot different than it used to be.
Yes.
So Susan, what are some last minute tips that you have for new moms, moms expecting, that you'd like to share?
I think you should read as much as you can while you're pregnant before you have your baby. You and your husband need to have a good heart-to-heart on how the helping is going to go and what your views are on mothers visiting, mothers-in-law visiting, because sometimes that makes things worse. In the old days, it made things better because they were very helpful and not critical. Currently, I think a lot of new moms get their dander up when their mom or mother-in-law is there. Having somebody around that knows something about breastfeeding is just so helpful. If you have a good friend who's breastfed, if you know an LC, those things will get you off on the right foot because we all have questions during those first 2 months where you're building up a milk supply. I think that parents need to recognize that it's the most challenging time in their marriage. And I didn't even talk about how moms have no interest in sex, and dads may have not had much intercourse while moms were pregnant, depending on what's going on. And so everybody is keyed up, everybody is different during this phase of having a new baby. And most moms aren't cleared for intercourse for 6 or 8 weeks. And then, even when they're cleared, they may not be interested. They may think, I got this baby over there I got to take care of. And the husband might feel a little left out. There are just so many issues that come up for new parents. I want you to take a deep breath, recognize this is a very, very challenging time in your life, in your marriage, in your partnership. And give yourself some grace. If you have questions, go to some reputable sources. Get some good information from somebody who knows what they're doing, somebody who can help you. I think that's the best advice. Don't do this alone. It's so hard to have a new baby alone.
Definitely, definitely. Man, thank you so much for all this insight. And just as we mentioned before, like if any of you have someone that you know that is pregnant, expecting, just had a baby, or even not, just like this is really valuable information for them to have, and it might change the game for them in a way that you don't even know. So please share this episode with everyone and anyone regarding babies. I know I've learned a lot. I haven't had a child of my own. Can you believe that? I'm 40, and I'm one of the rare few, I guess, that haven't kind of gone that route. But I really do respect it so much, and I do see how much of a challenge it is, and it's just amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
Oh, you're so welcome. I just love to talk to new parents.
Amazing. And to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. And as mentioned, like, comment, share. Feel free to leave any questions in the comments below. We will be sure to get them to Susan for her to answer, and head to her website. There's her blog, her podcast, her services, her books, So Many Babies, and her new ebook. What was that ebook again?
Newborn Nurture.
Newborn Nurture. So be sure to check that out. Until next time, I'm Lisa Urbanski with The Advisor. This is Susan Landers. Thanks for listening.